Italy, and today we have the pleasure to announce Vito Peragine. He's a professor of public economics at the University of Bari and also head of the Department of Economics. And he's going to present some recent empirical and theoretical results on inequality of opportunity. So please, Vito.
Thank you. So thanks for the invitation. Thanks for being here. So I will present, so the idea was to present our last paper on theoretical results on equality opportunity, but then I thought that a more general overview on the approach to equality opportunity and some empirical results would be also a nice introduction to the theoretical paper I want to present. And so that's the plan of the talk, basically. So first I will tell you something about what is the equality opportunity approach, what is the motivation for this approach, if it convinces you. Then I will show you the basic setup of the equality opportunity model that we use, very briefly, very simply. Then I will explain what we mean by measuring inequality opportunity within this model, and this is all within a unidimensional setting, okay? And I will show you some empirical results, which are basically found on this new database that we built recently, which is the Equal Chances database. It's the first world database on inequality opportunity, right? Where you can find comparable estimates on inequality opportunity across the world. And then I will present the paper I was supposed to present, which is really a model of measuring inequality opportunity in a multidimensional setting, which is where the individual outcome is a multidimensional variable, but I will explain it, okay? So that's the primary presentation. I will go quite quickly on the first three parts in order then to focus on some of those results and on the theoretical contribution. This last part is a joint paper. I will give you the information. So let me start with the motivation. So first of all, when we talk about equality opportunity in economics, of course, is not a new issue, right? Many strands of the economic literature are concerned with equality opportunity. Here I just quoted a few people working on social mobility, people working on discrimination, people working on education, or the recent literature on long-term view on inequality in wealth and ordinated wealth are also motivated by inequality opportunity view. So it's not a new issue, right, in economics. As well as we could say that there is a large consensus on the idea of equality opportunity. Maybe part of this consensus is exactly justified by the fact that by equality opportunity people mean different things, okay? So when you ask, are you okay with the idea of equality opportunity, most people say yes, why not? I mean, it's one of the most agreed principles, but maybe it is agreed because people attach different meanings to the same words. So the literature I'm going to talk about today is quite new instead, and has a quite strict definition of equality opportunity, proposes a unified approach, and is mostly devoted to measuring the degree of inequality opportunity in a given society. Okay? So although the theme, the idea of inequality opportunity is present in many different strands of economic literature, the literature I'm concerned with today is a literature which is devoted exactly to measuring the degree of inequality opportunity in a given set, in a given distribution. Okay? And in this sense, is quite motivation. We can group three different kind of motivation. One is intrinsic motivation. Why inequality opportunity is relevant? Because the political philosophers say we should distinguish between fair and unfair inequalities. Not all inequalities we observe in the world are unfair, but only those inequalities which stem from the exogenous circumstances, all those inequalities which we do not have control, okay? And so this has been a rich debate in political philosophy in the 80s, basically, starting from John Rawls to Amartya Sen to Ronald Dworkin, and then in the development of by Arneson and Cohen and by Romer. So the idea is that in evaluating social states, we should go behind the welfaristic and the consequentialist view, and we should look at how, what is the process which generate a given distribution of outcomes. And the way in which a given distribution of outcomes is generated, it's relevant for evaluating the same distribution of outcomes. Okay, so in a sense, if to use the lexicon of social choice, the informational basis of the social judgment on social states should not be only concerned with the individual achievement, but should look at how the individual achievements are generated in a society, right? And so the idea, with some distinctions between the different authors, is that we should focus on opportunities rather than outcomes. So the first, set of reasons for which we can be interested in equity opportunity is of normative kind, right? Because we should consider the fair and unfair inequality. But then there are also some consequentialist reasons or instrumental reasons. There is a huge literature, as we all know, on the relationship between inequality and growth, okay? And in particular on the idea of finding some causal relation between the degree of inequality and the potential for growth. This literature, both in terms of empirical results and in theoretical models, has not reached a very strong, a conclusive results. And one of the reasons for it could be that not all inequalities have the same effect on growth. So it has been suggested that there are some inequalities which are good and some inequalities which are bad for growth. Okay? And those inequalities which are bad for growth, it has been argued, are exactly the inequality of opportunities. Okay? So one reason to be interested in inequality of opportunity rather than inequality of outcome is that that kind of inequality is the most harmful to growth among the inequalities you can observe in the real estate. And I can quote here the World Bank report in 2006, which was motivated exactly by this argument, and then there are some works on it. And then, as a third kind of motivation, there is a huge evidence now that the people evaluate inequalities according to whether they attach to the individual effort or to the lack. The responsibility for that inequality they observe. Okay? And the judgment they give to about the inequality, and also the preference they give to the public redistribution, depends on how much weight they give to the lack or to the individual effort in the process of generating those inequalities. And in general, in those countries in which people give much more weight to the individual effort, they are much more tolerant with respect to inequalities. They are much less willing, to spend something in terms of social protection, social redistribution. Okay, so it's a relevant issue. So these are three different kind of reasons that could motivate why focusing on inequality opportunities rather than inequality outcomes. Now, I go straight to the basic setup. The basic setup is mainly based on a model which was introduced by John Romer and Mark Ferbey independently into two different papers, and then many other contributions by the same authors. And you can see these three surveys which have been published recently. Okay, this is quite short, this is very long, and this is more focused on the measurement of inequality opportunity. And you can find the reference anyway. So let's see the model. So the model is very simple. It's a reduced form model. You have an individual outcome, X, okay, the individual I, and we assume that the individual outcome X is generated by three classes of factors. The first class is the circumstances. Those are the variables which are outside individual control, okay? So those variables for which the individual has no control. Okay, they are outside the realm of individual responsibility. So like family background, or race, or where you're born, or your gender, okay? the outcome, which is supposed to be some objective measure of individual advantage, income, wealth, but also health status, education, whatever is valuable for individuals, okay? And it's objectively measurable. Then you have effort, okay? Which is a residual term once the circumstances have been identified. And what is important here to think about this function is that this function is increasing in effort, right? So that's not a utility function in which the effort generated this utility. This has to be considered as a production function in which effort and circumstances generate more outcome. Then you have the resources of the policies. In the models in which you want to identify the optimal policies. We are not concerned with this problem in this presentation, but that's for completeness. Now, given this model in which basically you have outcome which depends on two classes of factors, then the equality of opportunity idea is basically made by two distinct sub-principles. One is the principle of compensation, which says that circumstances should be compensated for. And the other is the principle of reward, which says that effort should be rewarded, right? And so this is the egalitarian component of the equator opportunity theory, and this is the liberal component of the equator opportunity theory, right? Now, these two principles, of course, are independent. To be convinced, consider the full egalitarian policy, so outcome egalitarian policy, that will satisfy the compensation principle, but will violate the reward principle. Okay? On the other hand, a complete laissez-faire policy will satisfy the reward, but will violate the compensation principle. Okay? So these two principles are independent. So you could find solutions which satisfy the compensation, and solutions which satisfy the reward. So the trick here is to find solution or measures which satisfy both the compensation and the reward principle. Okay? And one of the first results in the literature is that if the function, here I have g, there's no g anymore, but if this function we call g is not separable in C and E, then compensation and reward in general clash. Okay, they're not compatible. So you have to give priority either to the first or to the second. Right? Okay, let's go on. Let's consider the simplest possible model. You have a finite population, okay? Finite set of circumstances and the finite set of effort. Okay? You can represent the population in this matrix, very simple matrix. So what is here? Here are the different effort levels, okay? And what is here? So this is C1, C2, C3, Cn, with some abuse of notation, are representing what? Combination of values of the different circumstances. Okay? So each C, in these rows here, is a combination of values of different circumstances. Let's make an example. Suppose that the two only circumstances are gender, okay, and family background. Okay? So gender, male, female, family background, high, low. So the first one would be, let's say, female, low family background. The second, male, low family background. Female, high family background, male, high family background. Okay? So each C is a combination of values of circumstances. Once we have organize the distribution this way, then we can define a type, which is a row, this matrix. What is a type? It's a set of individuals with the same circumstances, okay? And a row, in particular, is the distribution of outcomes within individuals with the same circumstances. And a tranche, which is distribution of outcomes from people at the same effort level, okay? So rows and columns, okay, tranche and types. Now, having these, it's very simple to introduce two different approaches to the problem. The approach from the row and the approach from the column. The approach from the row is what is called the ex-ante approach. So basically what you do, you define the ex-ante approach theoretically as the approach in which you define the equality of opportunity as the situation in which all individuals have the same opportunity set, okay? And what is the trick? That you interpret the distribution of outcome within a type as the set of outcomes, sorry, as the opportunity set of each individual in that type, okay? So you exploit the information about the outcomes which are eventually reached by all individuals in your type, okay? And use that to infer what is the set of opportunities which are open to you as belong to that type. Okay. So basically then, the compensation principle, which says that you should compensate for the circumstances, in this ex-ante approach, brings you to focus on the inequality between the opportunity sets, which is the inequality between the outcome distribution of different types. Okay? On the other hand, if you look from the column, not from the rows, okay, so the ex-post approach, you start by identifying the effort. Okay? And then you say that there is equality of opportunity if people who have the same effort have also the same outcome. Equal effort, equal outcome. If you have the same effort but different outcomes, in this deterministic model that we are working in, that inequality has to be determined by the circumstances. Okay? So then the focus becomes the inequality of outcomes within the set of people at the same effort level, which is within the tranches. Okay? So basically, in the ex-ante approach, you focus on inequality between the rows. In the ex-post approach, you focus on inequality within the columns. Okay? That's a very simple way to illustrate it. Okay, that's for the compensation. What about the reward principle, no? The liberal part of the theory? Now, for the liberal part of the theory, you have different positions in the literature, so different way to express, to decline the principle reward. I will focus on these three because those are the three that I will use in the theoretical paper I'm presenting later on in the presentation. The first one, utilitarian reward, is let's say the most libertarian one. What does it say? It says that once you have control for the circumstances, any inequality of outcome you observe within a type, okay, is irrelevant from a normative point of view. So you are neutral with respect to any inequality of outcome within a type. Okay? So an inequality of outcome within a type is fair. That's the extreme version. Then you have an agnostic version, which basically you don't express any attitude with respect to inequality within a type. Okay? So then you only are left with the compensation principle, which is concerned with inequality between types, but nothing is said about inequality within a type, so agnostic. Or you can say you are inequality averse with respect to also outcome inequality within a type. Okay. Now, to convince you about this, I mean, one could say, okay, why, if we are opportunity egalitarian, we should be inequality averse? Okay. Let's make an example. Suppose the two of us have the same circumstances, okay? So then she has an effort which is higher than me, okay? Everybody would agree that her outcome should be higher than mine, okay? Because that's the idea of reward. But suppose that for a tiny extra effort, she gets a huge extra outcome, okay? We could still think that this huge difference is unfair. So we could recognize that given the extra effort, she should have an extra outcome, so we could respect this reward principle, but still be reluctant to accept any huge inequality, okay? So the idea of being inequality averse within a type doesn't contradict the idea of your work. Okay? So you have basically different versions of your principle. So different degrees of aversion to inequality due to effort. Okay? So there are some theoretical results that I summarize here. The first is theoretical result is that ex-ante and ex-post compensation, so types of tranches, are in general incompatible. Okay? So either you endorse the ex-ante approach or the ex-post approach. There is not an equality measure which satisfies both ex-ante and ex-post compensation principles. In general, the clash between between compensation and reward, okay, appears only if you endorse an ex-post compensation principle, not an ex-ante compensation principle. Okay? So then you are left with this conclusion. So either you endorse an ex-ante view or you look for a second best solution. So if you endorse an ex-ante view, then you can satisfy the reward principle. If you endorse an ex-post view, so ex-post compensation, then you have to renounce to the reward principle. I'm sorry I'm too short on this, but that was just to give you an idea of the theoretical relationship on this. So let's go on and let's see now how, within this model, we measure inequality opportunity in the unidimensional case. So measuring inequality opportunity basically can mean three different exercises. So the first one is testing for inequality opportunity. So you have a distribution, you want to test, is there inequality opportunity there or not? Okay, that's one problem you can ask. The second is obtaining some partial orderings, like Lorentz dominance, or first order dominance, or whatever, partial orderings for distributions, basically, or complete orderings, right? Now, in the complete orderings, basically, the approach is the following. Starting from a distribution of outcomes, consider the matrix I presented before. What you do, you construct a counterfactual distribution which doesn't contain inequality due to effort, but preserves all inequality due to C. Okay? And then you apply a measure of inequality to this artificial distribution of X. Okay? In this way, you are captured the inequality opportunity. Okay? So then the crucial moment in this process is that of defining this counterfactual distribution. So how do you erase the inequality due to effort and leave all the inequality due to circumstances? Okay? And the different approaches and the different measures we have in the literature are basically different definitions of this counterfactual distribution. Okay? And you have different measures in there, which have been proposed. Now, I will show you only two approaches here, not two approaches, two measures, which are useful for the following part of the presentation. The first is this, on the partial ordering, okay? I present this because then you will see a generalization in the multidimensional setting, okay? So it's useful to have it here. So here we are working with the matrix you saw before, okay? So in this paper I propose a social welfare function, which is an additive social welfare function, so I add all the incomes of individual, okay? These are the social planner imposed utility functions, okay? So I'm adding all the individuals. Then here I impose some technical axioms plus two normative axioms, which are ex-ante compensation, which is an equator version between types. This axiom says that if you transfer income from a rich type to a poor type, this increases social welfare, okay? And inequality neutrality within time, which is the utilitarian reward principle. Okay? So if you impose these axioms on these utility functions, okay, then you obtain the following dominance condition. What is this dominance condition? This basically says that to compare matrices, like the one I showed you before, what you have to do is just you have to take the mean of the rows, so the mean of the types, okay? So for each matrix, you will have a distribution of the means, okay? And then you have to compare these two distributions of the means by generalized Lorentz bounds. Okay? So what is the intuition? The rho is your opportunity set. Okay? The rho is your opportunity set. I can. So the rho is your opportunity set. So you evaluate this opportunity set by the mean, okay? Then you basically have a distribution of the values of the different opportunity sets, which is the distribution of the means, and then you compare these distributions by Lorentz, by generalized Lorentz bounds. Okay? And this is the condition I had in that old paper. And it's a partial ordering, right? Now, let's say a consistent way to obtain a scalar measure in quantum opportunity, so a complete ordering, is the following, in which you, what you want to do? You want to transform the original distribution into a distribution in which only the circumstances-based inequality are left, okay, while the inequality due to effort are removed, okay? So what you do here, basically, you remove all inequality within a type by smoothing the distribution, so by substituting the mean of each row to all individuals in that row, the mean of the type to all individuals of that type. You do it for all types, okay? So when you measure the inequality there, you are capturing only the inequality between types and not the inequality within types. Okay? So this is a between types inequality. And at the end of the day, it's just an application of the between group inequality. Okay? That's the simplest way to measure it. Okay, then there are some other measures that I will not mention here. You will find in the subway. Okay, now, this is a very simple theoretical explanation of how we measure inequality of opportunity. Then, of course, when you go apply the analysis, there are a lot of details, so to speak, that can can affect very much your results. Here I mention a few. First of all, again, which concept of inequality of opportunity? So the last measure I propose you is a between type inequality, which endorses the utilitarian rule and the ex-ante compensation. But for each combination of the ex-ante ex-post compensation and the different reward principles, we have a different measure. So first of all, you have to choose which measure you want to apply. And then you have a parametric or non-parametric way to obtain this mu, okay? That's another choice you want to make. Then you have to measure the inequality in that artificial distribution. So which inequality measure do you want to use? The Gini index, the tail index, the Atkinson index, or any other index you want to use, and this will affect. And here, also we have a paper in which we discuss this point, which is a crucial point. And then you have the choice. So first of all, of course, you have a normative choice. What are circumstances and what is effort? Okay. But in addition to the normative choice, what are the circumstances? Suppose we decide that the circumstances are parental background, okay? Expressed in terms of parental occupation and parental education. But then, how do you treat these two variables? So, how many categories in parental education? How many categories in parental occupation? And all these choices will have an effect on the results you have on the inequality opportunity. So, these problems, all of these, of course, affect the comparison you want to make. If you want to compare inequality opportunity estimates of two different countries, in addition to the usual problems we have for inequality comparisons, what is the income definition, what is the equivalence case we are using, what is the definition of income itself, or we are using consumption, we have these additional issues, okay? So each of them has a... So, as the theoretical literature is quite young, also the empirical issues are treated quite young. One point should be stressed before going on to present some results is the following. Okay, once you identify a given set of circumstances, what you do, you measure inequality of opportunity with respect to those circumstances. So parental background, gender, ethnicity, let's say. Okay. You know that there are some other circumstances that you do not observe. Okay. So what you're doing, you're not measuring the inequality opportunity, okay, full stop. You're measuring the inequality opportunity with respect to those circumstances. Okay. Now, has this number some value? So what we argue here is that it has some value, because what you can be sure of is that once you have identified a set of circumstances, if you add some more circumstances, the new inequality opportunity measure can only be higher than what you're measuring. Okay? So you're identifying a lower bound of inequality opportunity. And this can be easily explained by this example. Suppose you have three types. Okay, you measure inequality in this setting. So let's say only race is observed, black, white, Hispanics. Okay, you have three types. You are measuring inequality opportunity. Then you want to add an extra circumstance, let's say gender. So what happens? That these types now are divided. Okay, each type into two. So you have six types. So any inequality measure that you would apply and satisfy certain properties is such that now the new inequality between groups is higher than what we had before. Okay? So inequality between groups can only increase. This is true for the non-parametric approaches, which is the one I'm talking now, but it's also true for the parametric approach. Okay? So the interpretation of the measure, I want to stress and I close this argument, is a lower bound, and it has always to be interpreted with respect to the circumstances that you use. Okay? So it doesn't exist such thing like inequality opportunity. It exists inequality opportunity with respect to those circumstances. Okay, let's go on. Now, I will show you some recent empirical findings. Let me start by saying that a few years ago, with two colleagues, Paolo Bonori and Chico Ferreira for World Bank, we tried a meta-analysis. We grouped many empirical analyses which were around on inequality opportunity in different areas of the world, okay? And we tried to compare, you know, to see, okay, what is the amount of inequality opportunity. So we compare different papers. Yeah, we have the different papers for inequality opportunity in the different parts of the world. So there are some papers. Yeah? So Europe and Africa and South America and some other countries here, yeah, US and India, South Africa and so on. So the problem was that each of those papers used a different definition of outcome. Most of them had used an ex-ante approach to inequality opportunity, but some of them parametric, some other non-parametric, and so on. But then, on the circumstances, you had very different definitions of circumstances. Okay? So the problem was that those papers were very hardly comparable. So those estimates. I mean, we tried. We plot some numbers, so we did some some correlation. This paper was discussed by many people, but we were really unhappy about that because we knew that they were capturing different phenomena, although the label was inequality opportunity. So that was where we started a project in which we tried to make comparable estimates. So I'm not giving you any new theoretical results then. Okay, so the project is this. Equal chances. Here you find basically estimates of inequality opportunity based on comparable methodologies and comparable definition of circumstances for 47 countries in the world for inequality opportunity. But then we also have a measure of income mobility, intergenerational elasticity of income, and also measure of educational mobility across generations. Okay? And you can go on that website Yeah, it's equalchances.org. It's a cooperation with by World Bank. You can download many of these graphs, okay? I just comment one result, which is this. We have this very strong result that inequality and inequality opportunity are positively correlated. And this is true for the absolute level of inequality opportunity, but also for the relative level of inequality opportunity, which means that in those countries in which total inequality is higher, are those countries in which the portion, the percentage of that inequality, which is explained by circumstances, is also higher. Okay? Which is, if you want, a generalization of a result by my score, in which it shows a positive relation between intergenerational immobility and income inequality. Okay, that was... So, in these last 10 minutes, let me tell you something about this paper we have. So this is joint with Martina Cobus and Mike Capela from Polish Academy of Science. So what we do here, we extend the equality opportunity theory, okay, to the case in which the outcome is a multidimensional. So of course, the equality opportunity is already a multidimensional problem because we have outcome, circumstances, and effect. But here, the outcome is multidimensional. So basically now, for each type, okay, you have a matrix. You have individuals, but each individual, you have a different dimension of well-being. Okay? Now each type is a matrix, so what you want to do, you want to compare two populations. Okay? And we use an ex-ante approach in this paper, the exposed is still to do, and so you want to measure equality opportunity. The approach is normative. So we impose the existence of a social effort function. And then we impose some axioms on this social effort function, okay, in order to obtain some dominance conditions. Basically, we identify three classes of social effort functions. All these classes satisfy ex-ante compensation. But they differ each other in the reward principle. The first one satisfies utilitarian reward, the second satisfies inequality averse reward, the third satisfies agnostic reward. Okay? So we obtain, given the classes, obtain dominance conditions, and then we also define inequality measures, which are induced by the social function. Okay? So let me show you, okay, I will not give you any. So, in a multidimensional settings, the first thing to define is an equalizing operator, okay? So here you have, first of all, a multidimensional extension of the Pigou-Dalto principle of transfer, which says, basically, that if you take, for any attribute, you make an equalizing transfer, this is good for welfare, okay? And that's just a multidimensional extension. But then in a multidimensional setting, also the correlation between attributes matters. Because if you have two individuals with two attributes, okay? Having one individual which is poor in both attributes, and one which is rich in both attributes, or alternatively, having one individual which is poor in one attribute and rich in the other, and vice versa, you have two different situations. And you don't capture these two different situations if you only look at the inequality of the attributes. You want to look at the correlation between the attributes, okay? So in the multidimensional settings, this has been already discussed in literature, you have to take into account both Pigou-Dalto and correlation increasing transfer. And that's what we do. We assume that all attributes are transferable. These are the axioms we impose on the first class of functions. So first of all, monotonicity, then additivity. We have an additive social function. We have also some extension, but it's not there. Then we have symmetry within type and inequality neutrality within type. So this is the inequality neutral expression of the reward principle. I'm going fast. I think you will realize it. I'm not angry if you want to interrupt me because. If you interrupt me, I'm not going to finish it, but anyway. ex-ante compensation, you basically you say that if you have a people atom transfer between types, that's good for welfare. So this is the first class, and this is the dominance condition we obtain. What is this? Basically, this is a generalized Lorentz dominance applied to each dimension separately. So remember the condition we had before. So you take the average of each type, and you have a distribution of average. You compare this distribution of average by generalized Lorentz dominance. You do the same here, but you do dimension by dimension. So if you have n dimensions, you need to check n generalized Lorentz dominance conditions. Okay? So this is really a generalization of the results I had in the old paper that we obtained. Second class, we impose ex-ante compensation and agnostic reward. So we do not impose any structure on inequality within time. So what results we have? Basically, we have this. We have that a distribution dominates another distribution if and only if the distribution of utilities of the types dominates the distribution of utility of the types of the distribution according to generalized Lorentz dominance. For all utilities which are concave and submodular. Basically, concavity means that the better the type, the lower the first derivative, and submodularity reflect the fact that the association matter for your inequality judgment. And so basically what you do, you first aggregate individual utility within type, and then obtain a value of the opportunity set, and then compares the partial sums of such aggregate utility vectors. Okay. So it's a nice result, but still is, as the way I see it, is still a preliminary result, because this result is defined in terms of utility, so which is a non-observable, which is an infinite set of course, of functions. Okay? You don't have attributes or incomes directly in your dominance conditions. And I will close, and then you have the third family in which you obtain the same conditions but with a different set of utility functions. Okay? And in the last part of the paper, we define inequality measures which are induced by those classes that we characterized before. And so for each class of social welfare functions, we have classes of inequality measures that we can apply. It is the form of the first class, and this is from the second class. I'll just show it to you. And, and that's the conclusion. So what we are doing now in this paper, first of all, we are extending the domain. We are extending to the exposed approach in all its variants, and we are doing an empirical analysis with multidimensional attributes of the universe with the equivalent approach. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor, for a very nice presentation. So this is my area of interest also. So just I have few questions about the methodology regarding parametric and non-parametric. So I use a non-parametric approach, both type and tranche. So I found that the result is higher than parametric results. I mean that tranche and types overstate or overestimate the result of inequality of opportunity. So also I found some papers also they found that tranche and types overestimate or overstate the result of inequality. So what is the interpretation or what is the justification for that?
Right.
So maybe another question is about which one is better? Is it ex ante or ex post when measuring equality of opportunity? Because I didn't find clear advantage for the difference between ex ante and ex post. And also about the sample size, how the sample size in a certain survey affecting the using the business of, I mean the methodology or the difference between parametric or non-parametric. Does the type sample size affect the results? Thank you.
Yeah. No, I think the questions are related to each other in a sense. Because in theory, the ex ante and ex post approach, they satisfy two different principles, which are ex ante compensation and ex post compensation. So it's really a normative choice there. So in this sense, it's difficult to say which one is best from a normative point of view. You just have to be consistent. So if you endorse an ex post view, which means that your idea of a great opportunity is that at equal effort you should have equal outcome, then you should use an ex post. If instead you are interested more in the prospect of individuals given the same circumstances, then you should use an ex ante. But then there are some practical arguments which can push you toward the first or the second approach. In the ex post compensation, the ex post approach, you need to observe to identify the individual effort. Okay, so that's the main issue, which can be difficult to identify. And so there, as you know, the problem is that we know that even if we distinguish between circumstances and effort, we acknowledge the fact that the effort can be influenced by the circumstances, right? So then the problem becomes how to identify some variable which is clean from the effect of circumstances. So Romer's proposal was that of nullifying the effect of circumstances on effort by taking in the distribution of effort of different types, not the value of effort, but the percentile in the distribution of effort, okay? So suppose we belong to different types, we express the same effort. Okay, let's say that the variable effort is years of education. Okay, we are at the same effort, Romer says, not if we have the same years of education, but if the position of my years of education is the same position of your years of education in the respective type distributions. Okay, so that's a possible solution. So you always have to consider this, that if you apply an ex post approach, even if you find a nice variable which identify the effort, you should always consider that the effort is in part determined by circumstances. So you should clean for that effect. Okay. So you either find a good way, a satisfactory way to clean for that effect, and one is a Romer proposal, but there could be other econometric, more fancy way to do it. So but either you find a convincing way to clean for that, otherwise the approach becomes less convincing. Okay. That's, let's say, a limit of the ex post approach. But again, a limit, but it could also be a richness, because if you find a nice econometric way to identify the effort by cleaning the effect of circumstances, then you can go through the ex post. Okay. Now, having said this, having identified the effort, then there is the problem of how many effort levels, right? Which is also how many types, and this choice will have an effect on the measure of inequality. Okay. I think this is a common issue when you measure inequality, because even when you measure inequality in general, many operations you do on the distribution, censoring the distribution, transforming the household income in individual income, it has an effect on the results you have. The important thing here is to be clear, to be transparent to what you do, and if you make comparison, to be consistent. So it wouldn't make any sense to compare the ex post inequality opportunity in one distribution in which you have 10 tranches, and the inequality opportunity in a distribution when you have the same population but 100 tranches. Okay. But if you have a comparable sample and a comparable number of tranches, then the comparison becomes sensible. And this is also linked to the other question you asked, which is the parametric versus non-parametric. Now, in general, the parametric approach was introduced as a practical solution to the problem of having fewer observations. If you have fewer observations and you partition the population into types, then you really you risk to have very few observations within types. And then your errors become too big, okay? And so that's why the parametric approach was introduced for a pooled data set in which you cannot do the non-parametric partition into types. But if the database is sufficiently large, I mean, that's my experience, you shouldn't have many differences between parametric and non-parametric. If you have difference, then it means that the non-parametric approach is not really implementable because the number of observations is not that big. But that depends on how many types you have, so how many observations you have during type. So it's really a practical issue. But yeah, I don't know if you answered to your question, but yeah.
Yeah, I because of extreme observations, especially if you're looking at income data, extreme observations could really influence the counterfactual distribution. And maybe looking at a median, I'm not sure, but maybe looking at median values, weighted median values would be more appropriate if we are looking at income distribution for creating that counterfactual.
Now, what you say is right. When you do the smoothing operation, so basically you go from the original distribution to to this distribution, okay? So you remember the original distribution, then you go to this distribution, okay? So you do the smoothing. So what you're doing? You are basically canceling all the extreme values, both high and low extreme values. Now, then you measure inequality in this artificial distribution. And then what you do, you take a ratio between the inequality in this distribution and the inequality in the original distribution. This ratio is your relative inequality opportunity. Okay? Now, there are some indices which are extremely sensitive to the presence of extreme values in the distribution. And when you cancel the extreme values, you go to this, the inequality goes down, down, down very quickly. Okay? One of those indices is the really all the class of the tail entropy measures, both tail 1 or tail 0 or tail 2, any of them. In particular, the mean log deviation, okay? It's particularly sensitive. That is why if you use the mean log deviation, when you do the smoothing, you will have a drop, a very quick drop in the inequality. But that is also if you use the median, because also with the median, you will not have the extreme. On the other hand, if you use the Gini index, which is not a decomposable index, but is an index which is much more stable, you will not suffer this problem. So in fact, in this recent paper that we have, that I was mentioning before, we strongly argue for the use of the Gini index in a greater opportunity. Because even if it's not decomposable, it has this very stable behavior, which is a good feature of the index. And we think that the non-decomposability here is not a problem, given the interpretation of the inequality opportunity measure as a lower bound. Okay? So given this, even if it's not decomposable, you're not not losing much. So I would be careful in using the entropy measures, because they give very low, very low values, and these are artificial, results, given the sensibility they have to the extreme values. Yeah.
Cross-national ethnic
same ethnic lines that are comparable across countries, for instance. And I imagine it's with other aspects of circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's a crucial point. So, as I said before, if you look now at the empirical literature on equality opportunity, you have different ways to measure circumstances, to identify circumstances, and so on and so forth. So the effort we made in this database was to make comparable comparisons and repetition. I mean, to have comparable estimations.
Yeah.
What do we mean by that? So basically, we have three classes of circumstances: parental education, occupation, and origin. Where origin can mean different things in different countries. Can mean, for instance, being born in south of Italy, north of Italy, if you are Italian. It can mean to have to be a certain ethnic group or another ethnic group. Can mean to be in a be born in a rural urban area in another country. And this is part of the answer. The second part of the answer is how we treat these circumstances. Okay? And so we have a paper with Paolo Brunoni and Laura Sallega, which basically propose a method by which we have a test by which we identify what is the best way to model, so to categorize the circumstances. Okay? And I can give you the reference, but this isn't recently published in the Social Choice of Life. It's a primary prevalence of them. And I'm not going to touch it now.
Yeah.
Okay, but basically, we propose a method to identify for each distribution what is the best combination of the categorization of circumstances.
Okay.
If you use the same method we have for different countries, then in a sense they are comparable. But that is also the crucial issue in this measurement exercise. Yeah.
May I conclude with a short question? My question is more on the how do you treat reliability? So, because if we look at the
ability,
inequality of opportunity says, fair and unfair sources of inequality, what is justifiable or not. And then on the other hand, it says about circumstances outside individual control, as for example ability is, and effort, which is controlled by the individual. Now, in the empirical applications, you always have ability as a circumstance. But that's for me not really an unfair source of inequality. I can justify, for example, if you look at inequality in opportunity in education, that the most talented students are rewarded. But at the same time, ability can be influenced by your socioeconomic background partly. So how can you, at least theoretically, and then?
This is a very good question. And in fact, this is this question brings me to discussing the relationship between equality opportunity and meritocracy. So in meritocracy, basically, the idea is that you should respect the merit of individual. Where the merit is, in general, defined as a combination, sometimes as a product, of ability and effort. Okay? While here, as you said, we put, in general, ability into the circumstances. Now, I think that the crux here is in clarifying what we mean by ability. Okay. What is ability? So suppose by ability we mean the productivity of a worker.
Okay.
Worker productivity, that's the ability. Or the student productivity. Okay. How good is a student in doing a math exercise? Right. So that ability, so that productivity certainly depends on how much you worked in the past, but also depends on the inherited brain, okay, from his ancestors or his parents.
And there might be also compensation, so the most talented people
So it's not an answer, but the real answer is that we distinguish these two parts. So what is what comes from your past effort should be in the responsibility side from our point of view. what is your inherited, let's say, ability should be in the circumstances part. Now, how this can be done empirically, I have no idea. But from a theoretical point of view, I think that the problem is the ambiguity which is around the concept of ability, which makes the two parts. And so that's why we have a hard time in saying if it has to be in the circumstances or in the effort part, because it has both components inside.
Mm-hmm. But it can be thought to be fair source of inequality, that one that is.
If you only consider the path which is related to your work, but if you are born because you are more clever than me, you are lucky. So luck is circumstances. That's the idea of the circumstances. I mean, the idea is that everything is. This approach, equate opportunity in political philosophy, is called luck egalitarianism. So egalitarianism of luck. So whatever is luck should be compensated for, which could be not really efficient.
Exactly.
Absolutely, but that's
And that's different from just
could not be efficient. That's not the it's a normative approach. It's based on a consideration of justice. Absolutely.
So, I think we close the session. So, thanks,
people. Okay, thanks to you for all the questions, too.